The weak ones of this world God has chosen to confound the strong. Wherefore, virtue is made perfect in infirmity. Now, once upon a time, there was a gardener. And he had a very beautiful garden, and he particularly had two beautiful rose plants. And he cared for them and nurtured them, and finally they both bore beautiful roses. One day, as he was going around the garden, he happened to notice that the branch or the stem of one of these rose plants was broken. Well, as a good gardener usually does, he made a splint. And he put a wire around that splint, and then he wrapped that wire with cloth, and then he put some more wire around that so the rose could continue to grow healthfully. Finally, a storm arose, and the rain came down, and the sleet belted the roses, and the gardener went out into the garden after the storm had cleared, and there he saw one of the rose plants completely broken and lying on its side. But it was the one that did not have the splint. The one that had the splint was unharmed, and it continued to grow and continued to bear roses. Now, why was this? The one that had strength in itself was broken in two. But the one that the gardener had cared for and had added that extra strength, that extra power, withstood the ravages of the storm. Now, the same thing happens in the relationship between the Creator and the creature. In other words, God tells us, without me you can do nothing. And also we hear St. Paul say, I can do all things in him who strengthens me. We also read in the scriptures about the house that was built on the sand and about the house that was built on the rock. Remember, the storm came up, and the one that was built on the rock, it withstood the storm, and the one that was built on the sand, it was demolished in the storm. But you know, there's something the scriptures doesn't tell us. And that is, which one had the strongest superstructure? And you know something? I'll bet you the one that was built on the sand had the strongest superstructure. But the one that was built on the rock, it was because of the rock that it was saved, not because of its strength in itself. Therefore, from this we have the conclusion, in weakness there is strength. The whole AA program is built on this fact, a paradox, but yet a very important truth. In weakness is strength. In AA we admit we are powerless. Our lives have become unmanageable. That means we're kind of weak. In fact, we're very weak. We're absolutely powerless. But immediately, we say we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves and that it could restore us to sanity. And then we find out as we go along the 12 steps that we are accomplishing, with the aid of this power of God, what we could have never accomplished on our own. Now, we know that history is loaded with examples of this truth down through the ages. We go back to the time of Moses. Remember who Moses was? Moses was the person whom God had chosen to lead the Israelites out of bondage into the promised land. And we know as a child, Moses was abandoned in the bulrushes. We also know that as a young man, he was what medicine calls a balbutian. He stuttered a bit. And so when God chose him to lead the Israelites, he said, "What can I do to be a leader?" The words did not come freely from his mouth. But then, realizing that the strength of God would work through him, he became the great leader who stood in front of the Pharaohs and did not hesitate not only to speak forthright, but very clearly of the will of God to free the Israelites from the bondage of Egypt. Then we have the prophet Daniel. Remember Daniel? Daniel was a prophet. And he had told the king some things that the king didn't like to hear. He had told the king that if he did not change a few things about the kingdom, that God would punish him. So what did the king do? He had Daniel thrown into a lion's den. Now, you can imagine what would happen. A human being thrown in with a pack of hungry lions. At least we would imagine that would happen. But it didn't happen to Daniel. Why? Because through the strength of God, Daniel remained unscathed, and the lions came over and lay down at his feet. Because Daniel was a lion tamer? No. Because of the strength of God, which through him was sufficient power over all the powers of the animal kingdom. And then we have David and Goliath. Remember David and Goliath? David was a frail built child. I like to imagine him as a little Lord Fauntleroy type individual. Well, he was raised in the kingdom. He was to be the prince and then the king. And so I like to picture him as a very frail built individual. Now, who would think of selecting David with all that weakness to kill this huge giant? Nobody but God, or someone who realizes that God's strength, using human beings as an instrument, becomes all-powerful. And therefore, David went out and with a slingshot. Now, I don't think they had the kind of slingshots we have today. But anyhow, he had one of these kind, I think, that you whiz around your head, you know, and let go. But anyhow, he got the giant right between the eyes. Not because of his accuracy, but because of the strength and grace and power of God guided that to the fatal point. And the giant was slain. David killed Goliath through the power of God. In weakness, there is strength. And then there were the three children in the fiery furnace. Remember them? Ananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. Now, I know that's right because I looked them up. You know, the fellow who was the king in those days had decided that these three children who believed in the true God were going to be thrown into a furnace that had been fired 7 times its normal heat. And that's hot. Now, anybody would imagine that after that happened, that all would remain would be ashes. All but Almighty God. He knew better. In fact, after a while, behold, these three children were found unscathed by the flames, singing canticles and praising God. Because they were fireproof? No. Because God's strength, God's power, had protected them from the natural power of the flames, which would have ordinarily burnt them to death. Then when Christ came along to establish Christianity, he had a lot of picking to do. He had to pick somebody to be the leader of his church. He had to pick some others to help the leader. And he had to pick a lot of people in whom he could vest the authority to go and continue what he taught. Now first, let's take one he chose, Peter. Now Peter was a character. He was first very impulsive. We see that when, for instance, the Lord came to the seashore and Peter was out in the boat. Immediately out into the water, walking on the water, he saw the Lord. But you know the funny thing about that? As long as he looked at the Lord, he kept on walking. But as soon as he looked down at the water, he started to sink. Through God's strength, he was enabled to achieve something above natural powers. And then in the incident, when the soldiers arrested Christ, what did Peter do? Immediately he took out his sword, whacked off one of the soldier's ears. He was very impulsive. Then, secondly, he was very uneducated. He was a fisherman. He had no education at all. He also was a braggadocio. He loved to brag. We see that at the time when the Lord said, someone's going to deny him, you know. And Peter said, I'll never deny you. No matter if they all leave you, I'll never deny you. Not me. Mm-mm. He used me. He was uneducated. We know what happened. Then he was a coward. There was quite an element of cowardice in his makeup. This is demonstrated in the courtyard. You know, after Christ was taken to the courtyard, Peter, he didn't want to get too close because he was afraid the soldiers would see him and grab him. And yet he loved Christ, so he wanted to follow him. And he went into the courtyard, and there some little maidservant came up and said, hey, you're a Galilean. You were with this man. Peter said, I don't know the guy. And three times he swore he did not know the man. Now, who would imagine that such a person would be picked to be the head and the leader of Christ's church, which he was beginning? Nobody but Almighty God. He not only did know it, but he did do it. Because in weakness, there is strength. He knew Peter would be willing. He knew Peter would cooperate. He knew Peter would be the instrument of his grace. And so we see that later on, that same person, so cowardly, with so much braggadocio and pride, with all the humility that is possible to be in one person, he asked that he be crucified with his head down in deference to the Master who was crucified upright. Then there was Paul. Remember him? His name used to be Saul. Now he was a very educated person. In fact, he was a Roman citizen. And he was very proud of that fact. He often referred to it. He often used it in his talks. I am a citizen of Rome. He had a terrific temper. We see that demonstrated when one time he got in an argument with Peter. And he says, I withstood him to his face. You know what that means? That means I shook my fist in his face. Now that must have been a pretty hot argument. Then he had some kind of a bodily weakness. He calls it the sting of the flesh. Possibly a physical ailment. But in spite of all that, he later on traveled thousands and thousands and thousands of miles. Now, no one would imagine that such a person would be picked to be the apostle to the Gentiles. Nobody but God. He not only knew it, he did it. Because again, in weakness, there is strength. And Paul was willing. Then there was Magdalene. Magdalene was a prostitute. Just an ordinary woman of the streets. She was a prostitute. Now, surely, no one would allow such a woman in their house. In fact, the Pharisee tried to kick her out. But the Lord said, now, hey, wait a minute. When I came to your house, you didn't offer me any courtesies. This woman, ever since she's been here, she's not ceased to wash my feet with her tears and dry them with her hair. And she was picked, in spite of all this, to be the one to whom was given the announcement of the resurrection, even though she was a prostitute. In weakness, there is strength. And she became later on the great Mary Magdalene. Then there was Augustine. Now, Augustine really was a character. He tells us in his autobiography that he used to commit sin just because it was sinful. If it wasn't wrong, he wasn't interested. Now, how far can you go? Now, surely no one would possibly imagine that such a person who had been guilty of almost every sin under the sun would be picked not only to be a priest, but even a bishop, believe it or not. In fact, he became a great doctor of philosophy and theology in later years. No one but Almighty God. Because in weakness, there was strength. And down through history again and again and again, we see this evidenced in the fact that the weak ones of this world, God has chosen to confound the strong. Well, of course, we don't have to go back in history. We go to any AA group in the world. And there we have examples of weaklings. Let's face it. People who have admitted they were powerless, who have admitted that their lives had become unmanageable, even as you and I. And yet God has taken us as an instrument, and you and I know has accomplished miraculous things all throughout AA. Because in weakness there is strength. In other words, we didn't have to be strong in ourselves. We had to be willing in our submission. The strength of AA lies in the willingness in admitting I am powerless. Because the more powerless I am, the more sincere I am in admitting that, then the more God can use me as the instrument of His peace. He uses us to carry the message to other alcoholics. You know, about 3 months ago, there was a certain good priest visited the convent where I stay in Indianapolis. And he was going to be there for 2 or 3 weeks. And as you also know, there are some people in this world who don't like me. And this Reverend Father gave evidence of that the first few days by sort of a coolness towards me. So one day at mealtime, he made the remark, you know, it must be terrible, Father, to have to deal with such people all the time. I said, no, not so bad. I said, you know, it's the same kind Christ dealt with. He shut up. In other words, self-sufficiency, we're told in AA, is fine as far as it goes. But there's always a time in every man and woman's life when self-sufficiency is not sufficient to solve the problem with which we are faced. And at that time, we must ask for strength from a power greater than ourselves. Now, in self-sufficiency of the man who refuses to admit their weakness, their inability to solve the problems, we find defeatism. We find the defeats of history. For example, Hitler. Hitler could not admit any weakness in himself. Napoleon Bonaparte could not admit any weakness in himself. The Caesars, the Pharaohs, down through history, the men who would not admit and submit were the defeated men and women of history. In fact, we find the whole AA program, from the beginning to the end, is a repetition of the truth: in weakness there is strength. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And all down the 12 steps, we came to believe. We turned our will over to God. We made a decision. We made an inventory. We continued to make inventory. We made direct amends. We sought through prayer and meditation. We sought only for the will of God and the power to carry it out. We carried this message to other alcoholics. All an evidence of admission and submission. And we find throughout AA that the ones who can do this the more sincerely will the more effectively be able to practice both sobriety and adjustment to every facet of life. Now we know that also that not only in AA, but the entire spiritual life of man is based on the statement, I am nothing, but God and I, we are everything. You know, there's so many guys and gals will come and say, well, Father, you know, this here spiritual business, that's fine, but I'm a weakling. I'm too rotten. You don't know what I've done. I say, oh, I don't? Oh, yes, I do. It doesn't make any difference what we have done or what we are. God never asks us, how strong are we? How perfect are we? He only asks, how willing are we? Because He doesn't need our strength. He doesn't need our abilities. He doesn't need our talents. He only needs our willingness. And then the power of God flows through us so that we become effective instruments in the hands of God. You know, Bishop Ritter, now Archbishop Ritter of St. Louis, was the ordinary of my archdiocese when I had my difficulties, you know. We at one time were very good friends, and then for a while we weren't such good friends. But now again we are very good friends. And it was only a year or so ago that he told me something I have never forgotten. And I think about it again and again and again. And that is this. He said, never forget, Ralph. He calls me by my first name again now. He said, God has no need of us, but He will use us if we let Him. There's a tremendous element of wisdom in that statement. God has no need of us, but He will use us if we let Him. Now let's see how this truth works out in all of the various affairs of life and in our attempts to adjust to life and to living. First, in our home life. Why are there so many difficulties and so many problems in marriage and in the running of a home? Well, I think that one of the primary difficulties is that when two people get married, they forget something. They forget that it takes three to marry. And to remain married happily, that's the husband and the wife and God. That's the reason you have the saying, the family that prays together stays together. I have an added part to that statement. And that is, The family who don't, won't stay together. In weakness, there is strength. And the same thing we teach our children, to be strong in themselves. That's fine, in as far as it goes. But I think the child and the growing lad and lass should be deeply impressed with the truth that somewhere along in life, there's going to be a problem which he or she cannot solve without calling on a power greater than themselves. And then when that time comes, perhaps they will be ready for it. Which means to teach our children to depend on God for everything. We don't need anything else. In weakness, there is strength. Then in our social life, who is the most attractive personality that we find? He or she is the God-dependent personality. The one who goes along day in and day out, hour in and hour out, minute in and minute out, depending on God for everything. Now, I don't mean pietistic people. I don't mean that kind, you know, who walk down the street with a long sour puss and a rosary in one hand and a prayer book in the other, talking about their neighbor all day. That person is not God-dependent. That person is a little bit cracked. I'm speaking of the person who goes along, and no matter what happens, you see them in AA in many of the groups, and they have on the tip of their tongue, God will provide. What difference does it make? So things are getting a little rough now in my life. Okay, God will provide. No matter what happens, there's nothing too great that the power of God cannot solve. God will provide. Go to the hospitals, to the poor farms, to the other side of the track, and see their people with that perennial smile and that perennial submission in all of their actions and that perennial repetition of that one phrase, God will provide. God will provide. The papers, the newspapers, and the magazines on occasion have been filled with stories of people who were blind, maimed, all kinds of real problems, but who were happy and who were adjusted much better than you or I. Why? Because they depended on God. And therefore, in weakness, there is strength. In social life, the guy or the gal who is always dependent on himself, there's no more irritating personality than the I guy and the me guy, you know. Like I remember one time in AA in Indianapolis, after the meeting, a fellow came up to me and he said, Father, he said, you know, you're not doing your job around here. I said, oh, I'm not? He said, no, Father, you're not. He said, look, there's so-and-so, and there's so-and-so, and there's so-and-so. They're supposed to be Catholics, and they're not back to church. You should go make them go back to church. I said, oh, I should? I said, well, I'll tell you something. I've been in AA now some years, been a priest a number of years, and I've learned one thing. We can't make anybody do anything. All we're asked in AA, whether it's a spiritual problem or any other problem, is to make ourselves ready to help when asked. Oh, no, Father, he said, you're wrong. I said, I am? Yes, he said, take me, for example. Now, he said, I teach my wife. He says, I teach my children. He says, I have made up my mind that I can do anything that I put my hand to. I said, you have? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, that's fine. And I remember I told my sponsor later on, I says, keep your eye on John. His name was John Doe. And we did, and he did. He hasn't got any wife to teach anymore, any children. The God-dependent person is the attractive person. In weakness, there is strength. I can't, but we can. Then in business, who's the businessman that goes broke? The man who is sufficient to himself. He doesn't need advice. He won't seek advice. He won't heed advice. So he goes broke. Who is the success? The one that calls in the advisors. He knows that I only have a certain amount of knowledge. Perhaps I have quite a bit. But there's lots of things I don't know. So when a problem comes up, he calls in an expert. He is the successful businessman. And then over and beyond that, he submits all of his problems to Almighty God. I remember one professional man, not strictly business, but a profession the same way. And I've mentioned this on prior occasions. A Dr. Abel of Louisville, Kentucky, at one time the president of the American Medical Association. He was a surgeon. And the story goes that Dr. Abel never lost a major case of surgery. But what so often is not told along with that story is that Dr. Abel never started a case of surgery until he had first asked strength and guidance from Almighty God. Then in our financial affairs, security is not in dollars and cents. What if I have $1 million? I can lose that in a very short time. Particularly as an alcoholic, I could lose it. No matter how many shekels I might have, or how much loot I might have hidden away, one binge could just decimate all that. In fact, it could get rid of all of it. But no one, no thing on earth can take away providence. If I am dependent on providence for today, God will provide financially as well as otherwise. Of course, He expects us to do the footwork. We should never forget when you pray for potatoes, reach for a hoe. You get more potatoes. But He tells us, consider the lilies of the field. Nay, neither sow nor do they reap. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all of his glory was never arrayed as one of these. God will provide. You know, the little sisters of the poor, to whom I was chaplain for a couple of years, have their whole idea based on this providence of God in everything. If you want to really talk to someone who has a simplicity of faith in God for today, you'll find that in the Little Sisters of the Poor. Then in our mental life, St. Thomas, who is well recognized as one of the greatest theologians of all centuries, when he was a student, was referred to as the dumb ox. But he tells us, in answer to a question which was proposed to him in his time, where did he learn all of this amazing knowledge he had later on? From Almighty God, in humble prayer and meditation. In weakness, there is strength. Then the curiovars. The curiovars, for those who don't know, was a priest in the little village of Ars in France. And in our church, he was canonized some years ago. But when he was a student for the priesthood, he was fired from the seminary for lack of talents. In other words, they would not ordain him because he didn't know enough. But in his humility, the curiovars finally kept plugging away. He went to his pastor. His pastor helped him out, and after years of trying, finally a bishop accepted him. He was ordained, and he ended up as a canonized saint. In weakness, there is strength. Then in our emotional life, we have guilt complexes, scrupulosity, elation, depression, fears, what have you. Most of these can be handled only by a submission and an admission of the necessity of the power of God. Sure, I'm going to have a guilt complex unless I bring into the picture the fact that God is all merciful, that He is not interested so much in what I did as to what I will today. Then perhaps that guilt complex will begin to lift. Then when I'm elated, I better depend on God, or I'm liable to go off on that tangent of egotistical pride. When I am full of depression again, I had better depend on God, or I'm liable to say to myself, what's the use? Why keep on going on? If I depend on God, though, again, that depression will begin to lift. If I can convince myself that whatever is the will of God, what difference does it make? If I am honest, in the 11th step I say, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. So if this is God's will and everything that happens, either God causes or permits, so why should I be depressed, or why should I worry? Why should I be full of guilt complexes? Why should I have any type of fear? In weakness, there is strength. And I believe that every alcoholic particularly has this element of fear as a part of his personality. But there's only one way that that will begin to lift itself, and that's in trying to convince ourselves again and again and again, God will provide. What I can't, God and I can. What I couldn't, God and I will. Then in the physical part of life, we know that medical doctors who treat the physical ills of man more than anyone else perhaps realize that they are merely instruments of God. Take, for example, again, Paul, whom we talked about before. The amazing number of miles he traveled with the definite physical weakness that he had is striking evidence that in weakness there is strength, even in the physical ardor. Then in our spiritual life, one thing we can never forget, or should never forget, in the spiritual life, and that is that I don't care what weakness we have. I don't care what sin we have been or are guilty of. Those things should never, and I mean never, be an obstacle to spiritual growth. Even if we so will and God so concurs, even growth to sanctity. Of course, in AA, we say that we ain't saints. Well, it doesn't say it exactly that way, but I think it says we aren't saints. But it says we are only growing along spiritual lines. But God could, if He has so ordained it, make a saint out of the worst sinner in the twinkling of an eye. When? Of course, that's God's business. That's God's business. So all He asks is, are we willing again? Not how strong are we? Because in weakness, there is strength when joined to the strength of God. So there's just three things that's absolutely necessary, and yet that's the only three things that are necessary to the living of a sober, adjusted, happy life. And that is prayer. And I'm not going to tell you how to pray. We say in AA, each one accepts God as they understand Him. So we go to God plus His strength or His grace plus goodwill. So the only element practically that we have to put into the picture again is goodwill. Then in our AA life, so many in AA, I won't say we use it as an excuse, but we don't practice the program more because we don't think we are able to. You know, it's amazing how we set our abilities in AA when we say, I'm doing the best I can. And of course, there are others on the other side of the picture. It'll come and say, well, Father, I don't know. There must be something wrong with me. I must be weak. I've had lots and lots of people who tell me, and they maybe have difficulty or perhaps even a slip, and they say, well, I don't know, Father. I just must be weak. Well, that's a wonderful excuse, as you know. But weakness is never a reason, never an obstacle to the grace of God. Willingness is all that counts. Take, for example, talking. Speaking at a meeting. How many guys and gals will say, well, I don't speak because I'm not a good speaker. I'm not a professional speaker. Well, after all, I'm positive that God has used many times the lousiest speaker in the world to carry His message to somebody who's waiting just for that speaker. And no matter who we may be, we can always tell ourselves that irrespective of my ability or lack of ability, that if I, for the sincere reason of helping myself and others, give a talk in AA, God will use me to reach somebody who's just waiting on what I said in the exact way I say it. God uses that. We are merely the instruments. And I'm going to give you something that might keep us from becoming proud in case God does use us as instruments to help others on many occasions. And that is this. God can also write straight with crooked lines. So if He uses us, that is not necessarily approval of us. That is merely saying to us that He has chosen us to carry that message to that person. And He has used that and made it effective in the person who hears the message. Same thing in 12-step calls. So many people say, well, I don't take 12-step calls. But what am I going to tell them? Well, the big AA book here tells you exactly what to tell them. Tell them what happened to you. You know that backwards. God will produce the effects. And that's the reason I think the most effective way to make a 12-step call, rather than worrying what are we going to say, is merely asking God to use us according to His will and providence in that call. I remember Doris Sheeran, who was the founder of AA in Indianapolis and whose name I use freely because Dore died a few years ago after 15 years of continued and contented sobriety. And he happened to be my sponsor. And in my own mind, I don't think anyone in AA had the program any better than Dore Sheeran. But anyhow, I remember many times fellows and gals in the group would ask him, they would say, look, Dore, what do you think about when you're making a 12-step call? Because for some reason, evidently because God chose him for it, for some reason he was very effective as a sponsor. But his answer is very striking. And his answer was always, I don't think, I just pray. He had something there. In weakness, there is strength. We never have to look at ourselves if we can only look to God. Then an open mind in AA. In AA we say, we read in the big book that open-mindedness is absolutely necessary for recovery. And we find a lot of fellows and gals in AA who have what we call a closed mind. Now, what is that telling us? A closed mind is one who refuses to accept something he can't himself know or does not himself know. He doesn't want to listen to anyone else. Whereas an open mind is the willing mind. You tell a new guy who comes to AA, just go to the meetings with an open mind. That simply means willingness to learn. And therefore, if we're willing to learn, God will teach us. God will use everyone with whom we come in contact in AA as an instrument to add more to our sobriety. And so therefore, the golden thread that runs through the entire AA program is again and again and again, in weakness there is strength. That is, if we want it. And that is up to us. And thank you for listening.